Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon. On cable TV and social media, we get day after day coverage of terrifying news. Mass shootings, Charleston, South Carolina, Orlando, Florida, just to mention a couple of them. Police shootings of unarmed black men, police being shot in Baton Rouge and Dallas, a truck steering into a crowd of people in Nice, killing many. And the banner on the TV says, breaking news. It's always breaking news in big headlines, tragedies, terrorist attacks. Bad news is traveling fast, and it appears to be omnipresent. What does taking in all that news do to our psyches? Our guest this hour studies how news media can affect stress levels. Mary McNaughton Castle is a clinical psychologist and professor of psychology at the University of Texas at San Antonio. She is also author of Mind the Gap. We'll be welcoming phone calls. And here's how you can reach our conversation. The number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, where we already have some comments, thank you, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. So it should be an interesting hour. Professor, thank you very much for being with us. McNaughton Castle, hi.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
So it does seem as though bad news is traveling very fast these days, isn't it?
Well, it is definitely traveling faster than it used to because of technology. And in addition to getting live feed instead of day-old newspapers, we also have so many more outlets that there's a lot of competition to get our attention, so it often seems like they're all screaming for us to look at them at the same time.
Yeah, or trying to be first. I'll never forget the night of the Charleston shootings. I, for some reason, was up late. I was watching one of the cable networks, and they were trying to jump on the story so fast that they didn't have anybody there, but they had somebody in London, of all places. So they were giving us reports from London with no information, just, you know, reports of what might have happened. And it started then, and it never stopped. It goes on and on and on.
Well, and that's one of the problems. If you look at the communications literature, news shows have to compete against so many other forms of entertainment now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I teach college students, and when you tell them that, you know, there used to be a couple of news shows in the evening, and there was no 24-hour news, they look at you like you're a dinosaur. But the truth is that those changes have changed the whole way that news is covered. And so, like you say, they're trying to be first, they're trying to be fastest, and they're trying to play to the sort of natural human need to know about threats so that we can try to protect ourselves.
Yeah. You have talked about the humans evolving to survive in a world of predators, but not smartphone news feeds.
Exactly. When I teach about the fight or flight response, when your mind determines that there is a challenge coming, your body kicks up its energy output, you want to breathe faster, heart rate increases, all those things predicated on the idea that you're going to either fight or flee. You've got to get away or perhaps freeze and hide. But in the modern world, so many of the stressors are cerebral. We don't actually have a physical response we can make. I mean, you might want to hit your boss or throw something at the TV, but it doesn't fix anything. There's an excellent book, if you ever get a chance to look at Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers, by a guy named Robert Sapolsky.
Hmm.
And what he talks about is that animals have a fight or flight response too, but they don't have the cognitive ability to worry constantly about the past and the future.
Mm-hmm.
So they live in the moment, whereas, you know, humans can get terribly stressed about something that doesn't actually ever end up happening.
Hmm. What is it about, and some of these are huge events, certainly. 9/11 was a huge event. What happened recently in Dallas and Baton Rouge and what happened in Orlando and in Charleston, these obviously are worthy of news attention. But this extends to local news and extends to trying to find something that has an element of violence in it and scaring the heck out of you, the nightly news for that matter, too. It all has elements of violence that somehow leads me to believe that the people putting together these shows think that it sells in some way, that we have a proclivity for whatever weird reason to watch this.
Well, I think there is a proclivity in the sense that in a natural world, if you eat some bad berries or get attacked by something, you want to remember every detail so you don't find yourself in that problem again. So I think that, you know, based on psychological research, it's pretty clear that we remember negative things longer than positive things, and we do kind of focus on the negative. But the other piece of it is that media has changed our whole view of the world, and we've gone from people who struggled to get enough information to people that are flooded constantly, not just with news, but of course with entertainment, social media, input, and there's a habituation that happens. So relatively minor things become boring, and we are looking for the next thing to catch our attention. And so I think you're right about the people who put the news together in that they're looking at what catches attention. And there's a research on risk, and the things that catch our attention are stressful events that affect lots of people, and they're unpredictable, and they're unfamiliar, and therefore they have a real scary kind of impact. And of course, you know, here in Texas, I don't know if other states have this, but we have signs on the freeway that tell you how many people have already died this year in fatalities of driving. And people just drive right by that. It's over 1,800 right now. Mm. But yet, if we see, you know, 20 people killed in a nightclub or a plane crash, it has that different kind of intrigue. And so we don't always pay attention to the right scary things.
Mm. And I believe that you cite the Oklahoma bombing as the starting point for this kind of nonstop coverage, was it?
Well, it depends on if you want to argue. I mean, they happened to be covering the Hindenburg when it blew up. But the really intense stop all the news, break in, cover it constantly, really started in Oklahoma. And then, of course, since 9-1-1, it's developed into a pattern. We know that, like you say, the first few hours there's going to be lots of conflicting reports and some of it's wrong. Over time, they start having authorities speak. And when all of that has died down, then they start talking to victims. And we all kind of expect that pattern now.
Mm-hmm. So what happens to us? Does it harden us? Does it make us anxious? Can it cause post-traumatic stress in some people?
You know, there were some studies done in New York looking at post-traumatic stress relative to how far you were away from the towers, and it looked like people who were not directly affected could experience some symptoms of PTSD. When I looked at it here in Texas, where we're quite far away and the people in my study did not know folks that were affected, I didn't find that it caused clinical depression or anxiety or PTSD, but it did cause what I kind of termed malaise. It's this low-level kind of anxiety, worry, and it feeds into our attributions or our belief that the world is getting worse around us. And, of course, what's so ironic about that is numerically, objectively, a lot of things are actually better, including crime. But it doesn't feel like that when you see so many stories.
Mm-hmm. But for people who are predisposed to perhaps some anxiety disorders, I would imagine that watching some of this on a daily basis, if not hour by hour by hour, you can watch it 24 hours a day if you want to, could lead you to something more serious, perhaps.
And that I would agree with, that if you've already, say, had PTSD from combat or some other trauma, there's some evidence that seeing, you know, live shootings on TV can upset you. And I think that people who are depressed or anxious already, it might exacerbate things. There's a theory we like in psych called the diathesis stress model that says you get sick when you have a stress and a vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I think about. But on a less extreme site in terms of mental illness but still affecting us, I think it does alter people's choices. When I talk to young people, a lot of them say, well, after watching a lot of news, my decision is that everyone in politics is corrupt, so I'm just not going to vote. Or I hear people say, well, I'm not going to watch any news because it's all so upsetting, I just can't take it. And I think that when people go to extremes like that, it causes problems in their life, even if they're not, you know, reaching mental illness per se.
There also are stories that really tear at your heartstrings, all those immigrant stories, people dying in these boats in the Mediterranean. For a little while, we had this great sense of empathy for these because of the picture of the one child. Well, there have been many, many children who've lost their lives and many others who have lost their lives, refugees from Syria, mostly in the Mediterranean. That story is not front and center anymore. Is part of our response, our empathetic response to what's going on in that, terms of that kind of tragedy, helpful in terms of trying to become more involved in politics and find a solution to this?
I think so. What I believe happens, again, plays into our assessment of risk, and we are far more affected by a story of a real person we can picture than numbers, which I think is why the child on the beach upset people so much. And I think, in general, Americans are very generous. After Orlando, people lined up to donate blood. After hurricanes and tornadoes, there are more volunteers than they need sometimes. But when there's a constant diet of bad news from all over the world, I think that can become so overwhelming that sometimes people tune it out. And it's been called compassion fatigue before.
Mm-hmm.
That, well, you know, you're just getting hardened. And I actually argue the reverse. I think that probably for good mental health, you may have to tune some of it out. You know, there are even studies that show that people who are not depressed are unrealistically optimistic about things. So it might be useful sometimes to tune it out. And that's where I start talking to clients and students about picking something they can do. Because in the past, if you were in a crisis, it was there. You had things you could do. You were part of it. But you didn't know about tsunamis and landslides and wars in other places. And that, again, is part of this new media world where even if our environment is safe, we're hearing about others. And it's realistic to think, well, I can't fix those things there. And so that's where I say, all right, you're going to tune out that commercial with all of the starving dogs and cats. That's fine because you need to finish your schoolwork tonight. But go volunteer at the Humane Society. Try to find something you can do that addresses one of those things that affected you.
Mm-hmm. And we're mostly talking about adults now, but obviously it's a real concern because the news that we're focusing on and some of these events, as I said earlier, you would focus on because they're big news. Mm-hmm. When you have children in the household, I can see, you know, being 7 years old or 8 years old and just having terrible nightmares for years. I used to have nightmares about World War III all the time because we were going under our desks worried about the Cold War. What about today's young children and terrorist attacks or shootings that are taking place? I would think you could become very afraid as a young person.
I think so. I mean, my own daughters were 7 or 8 during 9/11, and one of them was always worried that airplanes flying over us could be a problem because, of course, they don't fully understand it. And that's where I think parents really do have to come in and talk to kids about what's going on and actively monitor what they see.
Mm-hmm.
But the irony of this, of course, is that we also have a large population of kids in this country who are living in urban and dangerous areas where they're living some of this violence
right,
themselves.
Every day, yeah.
Exactly.
All right, let's welcome phone calls. How to cope with a terrifying planet, how cable news and social media is coping with a terrifying planet, and how are you responding to it? What do you think is the responsibility of news operations? They're going to go where they think there will be more viewers, but it really does extend to local broadcasts as well and cable broadcasts. If we are focusing on all these horrendous things 24 hours a day with these amplified headlines, breaking news. Everything is breaking news, it seems to me. That's all. It's always breaking news, no matter what the story. Or terrorist attack, and then it's pounding music, and you hear it on and on and on, hour after hour after hour. What does it do to our minds? What does it do to our hearts is the question of the hour. And if you're predisposed, if you've had traumatic events in your life, can it lead you to perhaps post-traumatic stress? What do we do about all this? How do you take a break from it? Does it help to help in a situation, or do you need to just turn all of this off and just go look at the green grass or a pretty tree or a body of water or something, just kind of contemplate better things in life, or can you become completely immersed in this? And what's the responsibility of the press to cover things fairly, or do you understand their need to be first and cover it better than anybody else and cover it more often than anybody else? Here's our phone number. Our guest is Professor Mary McNaughton Castle. She's a professor of psychology at the University of Texas at San Antonio. She's a clinical psychologist and author of Mind the Gap. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's go to some phone calls. Jim is our first caller in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
I appreciate your guest commentary that she's publicizing the fact that not only is the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads, but now it not only leads, but it repeats. But the one thing I wanted to point out, and I want to say this slowly, is that every single massacre, I call them massacres that you mentioned, Baton Rouge, Orlando, Dallas, Sandy Hook, Denver, Charleston, all the victims had one thing in common. They were all shot with an AR-15 military assault rifle weapon. We can't afford to go look at a brook and try to blot out this violence. We need in November to line up at the polling booth and punish the party that is preventing common sense gun control legislation from being even voted on in the Congress, and that is unfortunately the Republican Party. We need to line up, not check out. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Jim, for the call.
Actually, that dovetails with exactly what I'm saying. He has found a cause that he can identify and work towards, whether that's getting people to register to vote or do other things, and that's the kind of enthusiasm I think people should have. But I also think that you have to limit the number of overall causes you allow to get you upset, because you could then go on from shootings to refugees to immigration. There's so many things out there right now.
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting comment from Jennifer on Facebook. I believe I had PTSD after the 9/11 attacks. I was at home with a toddler riveted to the TV news. We live in the country. There used to be a private airstrip nearby, and when small planes would fly low and close to our property, I found it very mentally disconcerting, even though rationally I knew it was just local people giving rides to tourists. To this day, I get weepy when I see photos or footage of the World Trade Center collapsing or intact. We got rid of TV in 2008, and I think that we're all the better for it. We're not bombarded with the negative images. Part of why we got rid of it was there's a lot on TV that children should not see, even at breakfast time.
That's another thing that I totally support. I think you have to think closely about how you consume news and what upsets you. And if you are a person who is affected by visuals, then TV is really a problem, because by the time you decide you don't want to see it, you've already seen it. So I do tell folks, if they can either limit the TV time they watch or go with radio or go with the internet. You know, it isn't necessary to stay plugged in 24 hours a day. And in fact, throughout the vast amount of history, people weren't. It's just a very modern phenomenon that we even can do that. But it's also hard because of our use of social media. And so you can be trying to take a break from news, and if something happens, it also will pop up on
Facebook. It sure does. Pops up on your phone. You get alerts from Associated Press all day long.
Exactly.
CNN.
And I've talked to a number of folks who were reporters, interviewers, and that's a problem for them because their job depends on staying plugged in. And it's another whole topic, but I think we're probably creating a lot of people in the news field who have symptoms of PTSD as well, because they're having to deal with this so often.
I was wondering if that was affecting me. No, I really do wonder, because if we work on this kind of show every day, we are obviously clued into what's going on all the time. And I noticed it on vacation last week that I didn't have a television set. And I did listen, because I have to for my job, even though I'm on vacation, to the Democratic National Convention. I saw the Republicans on TV, but I listened to the Democrats on radio in a cabin overlooking, you know, this really pretty body of water. And it does make a difference to how part of it's vacation, but part of it is not being tied into what's going on all the time and what the problem areas are, and you can get worked up about all of that. It's not very good for you all the time.
That's very true, and it ties into something that my college students have a terrible time doing, which is turning the stuff off. You know, and I ask them to spend 24 hours and count up how much time they are not asleep and by themselves and not listening to anything electronic, and it's under an hour for most of them.
Wow.
And there's that anxiety. I might miss something. What if that phone call was important or that event?
I know.
But like you said before, for most of these breaking news events, most of the coverage is repeating things that have already been said. There isn't new information every hour.
Right.
So you could create a little bit of a gap for yourself.
Jim, thanks so much for your call. We go to Jan in Dresser next. Hi, Jan.
Hi there. I have two comments. One is when they do that sensationalizing all the time, it's like fear-mongering. It creates fear. They look at everybody as a terrorist. Oh, Muslims are terrorists, and, you know, so on and so forth. It just builds that fear and that disrespect. The other thing is become kind of immune to it after a while, and you feel like it's a norm, and you can laugh and make jokes about it, and it's not a joking thing. And the other comment was when you talked about the baby on the beach, it builds a global awareness that we are not alone, and there are people that are suffering an awful lot more than us. So it does build up that global education and global empathy. But I don't think a lot of people have the ability to rationalize whether things are true, false, or in between.
Gosh, that's another topic that I have been advocating for a while now, that we should be teaching media literacy in K-12, the same way we have film literacy and we teach kids to read novels and literature with critical thinking. And it's very hard. And I think it might be that people don't have that ability, but I think it's also really, really hard in a world that has so many sources of information, and you can't always track which one is the most accurate. And, of course, we also have that tendency to listen to the ones that already say what we believe, and that doesn't
right.
work either.
Thank you, Jan, so much for your call. And Rod in Weyerhauser. Hi.
Yes, thank you, Kathleen. Yeah, another good program. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're a little far away sounding, but...
All right. Is that better?
A little bit. I feel like I'm at the eye doctor. Is this better? Is this better? It's a little better, Rod.
Okay. No, it's true. You know, since I've had the cell phone and where you can look up news instantly and stuff, I find myself that I never used to shake, and now it's like I'm shaking, you know, because you're aware of all these things going on, and it's like you want to instantly find out what happened there and there and there. So I'm looking back in history. It's just common sense. You know, okay, how many years do you go back when there was, 100 people on this earth, say, for example? Okay, two people didn't get along out of that one, so one of them killed the other one. They were within miles of each other, and they might have found out 2 days later. Now, when you've got billions of people, the percentage of murders and stuff, you really wonder if it's any worse than it's ever been. And also, I would like to say, when the atom bomb was used, that's what brought us into where we were or had to adapt and be posted on news overseas and stuff, because of the fact that, like, when Russia got the nukes, well, obviously, it's going to affect the whole world. It's not like before bows and arrows and stuff. Well, it just affected somebody in the local area. I mean, to me, it's just common sense.
Uh-huh. Professor?
Well, and you're sort of supporting a lot of things other callers have said. One of the things I don't want to come across as saying is that I don't think we need a free press. I think free flow of information is crucial, but we haven't really had a free flow of this kind of information for very long. You can go back. You've cited other wars. You know, in the Civil War, people didn't get news dispatches for months sometimes. Even World War II, they had reporters, but things were censored. It was really Vietnam when we first had television reporters, and of course now we have people with cell phones, and so it's that line between what is useful information and what becomes overwhelming information that we're all sort of talking about, trying to figure out.
What do you recommend? Thanks, Rod, very much for your call. All of us do to ease some of the tension of all of this media and cell phones and everything. Do we need to, will it make us feel better to take a walk every day and look at some trees or something? I mean, something just as basic as that? What do we do?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing is to really put some perspective in place. So crime, even civil rights, even human rights may not be where we want them right now, but they are not as bad as they have been in the past in most places. You can look at some of the Human Rights Watch data. Does that mean we should stop? No. And that's where I get the title for my book, which always puzzles people. But I was in London at a conference on stress thinking about this, and the overhead keeps saying, you know, mind the gap when you're going to step on the tube. And they mean don't put your foot in the gap between the platform and the train. But I started thinking about stress as the gap between what we have and what we want. And so that's a constantly moving target. And there are things we can do in the environment to change it, and we should. But really, so much of it has to do with the way that we interpret or think about it. So you'll hear this even from people at ground zero of a disaster. Some will say, I've lost all faith in the world and I can't go on. Mm-hmm. And others will say, but I really focused on the first responders or the heroism of other people. And that's in your mind because the event was the same, but it's how you look at it. But in order to do that, you have to be aware of how your own attributions or thoughts are affecting your feelings. And you have to know that feelings are very much linked to physiology. And so when you ask, you know, go walk in the woods, deep breathing, distraction, I think we all need those things, and probably more than ever because we don't have much time for them in the modern world.
Right. Let's go next to Mark in Sheboygan. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I basically, about a year ago, unplugged my cable television. And went to over the air, which people should know that it's out there. I am equidistant between Milwaukee and Green Bay, obviously in Sheboygan. I have one antenna in my third floor attic. We are an old Victorian, and the antennas are inside, inside the house. Uh-huh. And I get all the channels I need. I get more PBS channels now because I get the sub channels, and I'm saving about $100 a month. And with a couple of Rokus with their streaming devices, I can watch whatever news sources I want to when I want to watch them, and I'm out of that loop. I used to watch the cable news networks all the time, and it did raise my anxiety up. And I think once you're out of that loop and you don't hear the constant advertisements, which is all part of the commercial television thing of, you know, what to buy next and what you don't have and what you should have, makes a difference.
So what do you watch now? When do you feel you need to watch, Mark?
I'll watch PBS NewsHour, and then I might turn on Free Speech Television or all Young Turks or, you know, multiple sources I can get when I want to watch them, and I'll stream that.
Right.
And the other thing is people should know is people are struggling. I calculated between 1992 and 2015 when I did this, I paid our local, well, it's not local, it's a national cable provider, over $26,000 for the privilege of watching television.
Whoa.
Yeah, figure that out, 25 years.
You know, yeah, I understand.
$80 a month?
Right.
That's what it is. And would that be better in your 401k, or would that be better to give it to, you know, this particular company who is very rich?
Yeah, they are very rich. They're really, really rich. Professor, what do you think?
I think that there are two things there. One was what we'd call proactive coping, looking at the problem and instead of giving up, finding a solution.
Right.
And the other is using humor, which can help as well. And sometimes we'll make fun of gallows humor or other things, but there is a place for not allowing yourself to become so overwhelmed by the negative, again, that you lose perspective, that you don't see the things that are going on that are better. It happens with the media in part because they show us lots of unfamiliar places where all we see is the bad thing happening. Whereas in our own life, you know, there might be something negative in our neighborhood, but we also see the good teacher or the nice officer or whatever we're interacting with. And so that balance is easier to get in person than it sometimes is by the media.
Thank you so much, Mark, for your call. Paul in Washington County. Hi.
Hi. Good morning or good afternoon. Here's my dilemma. I'm an agnostic Christian, which sounds like an oxymoron. It is. But every life form on this planet, you know, from the walnut tree plant to bacteria, viruses, all the way to the alpha creature, is all predicated or based on predation. It's always something is preying on another life form. And that, I have difficulty reconciling that. If you look through history, human history, all the killing, the predation that has taken place from the Crusades to the major wars, and I have come to the conclusion that you can't, anybody, any rational mind cannot accept an intervening God. So in my mind, prayer is utterly useless, because through history, you can't find a scientifically proven event where there has been some divine intervention. Mm. So I find that just so disturbing when people wrap their belief system in this intervening entity that clearly he may exist, but he or she or it may exist, but that entity does not intervene, and we're just rolling the dice that we may live on beyond.
Mm.
My comment.
Yeah, your comment. Professor McNaughton-Castle, there are a lot of people who find an incredible amount of comfort in whatever that religious belief, speaking to maybe a God they believe is a real God, or it certainly is a source of, look at what happened in Charleston. Look at how the people handled that tragedy. The response was based on their faith. You can't fault people for that, really, can you?
No, and I think that is part of our human quest for meaning mm-hmm. and belonging. And at the same time that you can see, obviously, a history of violence, you also see a lot of movement over the years towards more connection, more tolerance overall than has been seen in the past. And I think people find their way through all of those things different ways. But whether you are religious or not, my question would be still, how do you cope with the stress of inequities or injustices? And you know, one way to go is to say, well, there's no meaning and purpose, and I just won't try. But I also know people who say, well, I can't resolve some of those things, but I'll try to make this situation better. And I think that part is a choice.
Thank you so much, Paul, for your call. Judith and Merrill, hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Oh, well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to express a point of view. I have been around this country for a long time. When I was a child, my family, during World War II, we gathered at the radio to listen to President Franklin Roosevelt's fireside chat. And it was an extremely frightening time.
I'm sure.
And he gave us such comfort and helped us soothe our fears.
Mm-hmm.
I have not felt that fear until now, and I feel a worse fear. I am so frightened of Donald Trump. He says these horrible things, and he gets away with it, and he always has somebody coming behind him saying, oh, he didn't mean it. He was just joking. And he obviously wasn't. He's just so irresponsible, and one thing that causes more fear than even that is the fact that there are so many people in this country that support him. That's just my point of view, and I'm sure other people who have lived for a long time have the same experience.
Thank you, Judith, very much for your call. Professor McNaughton-Castle, are we living in an age where our fear is our politician, some of them?
Well, we're living in an age where constant media coverage has eroded our trust in anybody. And you can look at the numbers from the 1960s to now. Do you trust politicians? Do you trust the media? Do you trust physicians? Do you trust professors? And they've all plummeted. And, of course, FDR was a great speaker, and I think those kinds of talks are helpful to people, but what they weren't talking about, you know, most Americans didn't know about his health problems. A lot of the personal foibles that we hear about from our presidents now were not put in play then, and I'm not sure that was necessarily good either. But there's another problem, which is that it's very, very hard to get perspective when you're living through something. And so, of course, World War One, II, Vietnam, you know, we won't really know how all of this is going to play now. And again, what I say to people is if there is something you're particularly concerned or worried about, that's the place to put your energy into trying to make a change or reach out to people or find ways to address it on a local level. We can't all do it on a global level, but there are a lot of us at the ground zero level.
Yeah. I mean, my mind was just going back to, I wasn't alive during that time, but to Judith's comments, and I've often thought, I'm sure you have too, of our ancestors, or grandmother who had her sons off at war and you were sending people off to far off places where you had never been and you had a Nazi threat and you didn't know if you were going to see your sons or daughters again and you had rationing and lights out and oh my goodness, I'm wondering if there's something we can learn from that generation of how to handle fear and you know, the phrase that resonates is the only thing you have to fear is fear itself. I'm wondering if we did a better job of handling fear, which must have been very real in World War II in this country.
You know, I don't know if we did a better job or not. It's hard to really assess mental health or coping at a distance. But I think two things that they really mobilized in the civilian force, which the military has always done exceedingly well, is to unite people behind a meaningful goal. And because of what we weren't united in going into World War II, but the view that we needed to stop Hitler and after Pearl Harbor gave people a cause. And there was a lot of social belonging around that, which was tied up with action. So you could grow vegetables and collect things and be in the air watch. And one of the things we haven't done from 9/11 on is told people how they could make a difference now. So people feel kind of individually distraught, and they don't have a lot of sense of union or focus. And that might be something we could address, is how more of us could get involved.
Hmm. Thanks, Judith, for the call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about day-to-day coverage of news that makes us afraid, makes us very afraid, and how we're living in this world with social media and our phones, smartphones, and videos and nonstop coverage of horrendous events, I'll grant you, but it's breaking news always. It's 24/7, and we don't get away from it. And so what does it do to us is the question of this hour. Our guest is Professor Mary McNaughton Castle. Our phone number, and she is a clinical psychologist, a professor of psychology at the University of Texas, and she has a special interest in the interaction of stress, including the news media and the technological characteristics of modern life, with cognitive and personality factors that have an impact on our mental health and our physical health. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We have a couple lines open. They've been pretty busy, so if you want to get through, you could do that at this very moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls. Sarah in Madison, hi.
Yes, hello. Thank you for the program. I have lived through the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnamese War, and all the wars that are going on now that our country is contributing to. And I think there's many things you can do. For instance, you can support programs like Nuke Watch. You can subscribe to Progressive Magazine, Z Magazine. You can listen to Channel 21 TV. You don't have to just unplug your television. You can get a lot of information that way. I support groups with money because I simply can't do the work that I used to do. And thank you for the program.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
You're welcome. Again, I would argue that this is something people have to find for themselves, and it's really hard to stay grounded and to see what you believe and to stick with it when we are surrounded constantly by comparisons, not just of how bad or worse things are today, but also how we aren't rich enough or thin enough or any of those things. But the bottom line is how you think about the world and figuring out what things are important to you. And I agree, you know, not everyone can go and volunteer in some capacities, but I would argue that, you know, volunteering at the after-school program in your neighborhood and helping kids learn to communicate rather than fight would be a step. It's a long-term step, but there are places all of us could do things if we really put our mind to it.
Thanks, Sarah. Let's go to Gail in Fish Creek. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say that, you know, with the way that we take all this information in, knowing how much there is that can be hyped and built up for ratings on the networks and the sensationalized programs and how much can be opinion, you get hooked on a certain news media line and it just stirs you and stirs you. And to kind of pull back that and know there's a center and somewhere in all of this there's balance. But my question, that's how a lot of us deal with it. And when you get overload, I'm wondering if they take into consideration that stress actually burns your B vitamins. And when you are low on B vitamins, you cannot cope. You cannot handle things. Your brain, with less DHA, won't be able to comprehend or assimilate or as you say, just process the information. It goes on overload and it starts to shut down. So are we looking at the stress depleting everyone nutritionally and especially in the bees?
Well, I'm sure that there are nutritional effects, and if you layer that on to some of the other things that technology has created, like a lack of sleep, we are one of the more sleep-deprived groups of people in the world right now, and it's known that when you're tired, you don't handle emotional information as well. So, yeah, there is a bit of a perfect storm. And, again, this is a huge experiment that's never been run before. I mean, my grandparents were born in a time before indoor plumbing and electricity, and my kids can't believe that we didn't have cable 24-hour TV. I mean, it's been a really rapid change.
Sure has. We haven't talked enough, let's do that at this point before we go back to phone calls, about what the connection is between those who are prone to PTSD or to traumatic incidents, what happens to their brains and to their body when there is an overload on this kind of cable news 24 hours, terror mm-hmm. attacks or whatever. What can happen to somebody who's predisposed?
Well, the issue with PTSD, we think, is that when you've experienced a really life-threatening event, it affects the way that your stress response occurred. It probably affects how those memories are laid down. And going forward, you have a whole constellation of symptoms, including vigilance, nightmares, all kinds of anxiety, or sometimes sort of a sense of flatness or apathy. But the point is that it has this effect on your emotional functioning, and reminders or triggers can do that. So if someone has PTSD from combat, they may not like loud noises, they may not like, you know, trash on the side of the road because they're not sure whether it's an explosive.
Mm.
And when you watch very vivid news on TV, and, you know, we watch bodies falling out of windows and things at these crises, or even if you just think about it a lot, it can reactivate some of those feelings, especially if you haven't had treatment and you really haven't processed it. And one of the things we're finding now is that there are effective treatments for PTSD, but they're not an overnight solution. You have to get therapy and you have to work at it.
Thanks, Gail, for your call. Let us go next to Steve in Wonder Lake, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I really want to emphasize something that I think I've heard a couple of people sort of allude to, and that is with all the media we have and the major media, my solution is I don't listen to that stuff. I was in the service during Vietnam in the Philippines, and I was reading the paper over there, and boy, the world was falling apart, and kids were getting shot at Kent State University, and my dad would send me an audio tape of the Smothers Brothers show, and I realized life is going on normally over there, and it's really a media problem. Whenever I stopped listening to even national public radio because of Wisconsin public radio, you do such a much better job of providing balanced coverage. The choice of words that people use is very carefully calculated to sway your thinking. It was an on-the-media show where they told a story to two different groups and changed one word in that story, and it totally changed people's perception of the story. So I cannot listen to the 10 o'clock news. Very few people know what is in the Affordable Care Act. I have a copy of it. It's Public Law 111, 148, and the Reconciliation Act 152, I think. I haven't read it all, but whenever I hear one of these stupid things about what's in there, I try to find it in there, and it's really hard. But you really can't believe what you hear in the major media. I'm sorry, but that's just the way life is, folks.
Professor McNaughton Castle.
Again, it very much comes down to critical thinking. And you can go back, and there were, you know, wars pretty much started by things put in the media, and the Penny Dreadfuls were these novels that they wrote to sort of prey on people's fears and interests. And I agree, you know, and we're talking moderation here again, and that's something that the media doesn't always do. But I don't advocate watching no news, but I don't advocate watching it constantly either. And that's what I'm telling my students about technology in general. And the analogy I'd make, and someone already brought up, you know, we dropped the nuclear bombs in Japan, and then we started debating the ethics. And we have medical technology right now that keeps babies alive, it keeps elderly alive, and we're not always sure that the quality of life that we're promoting is ethical. And I just think technology has crept into our personal lives so insidiously that most of us have never sat down and thought, how do I want to control this, and how much do I want it to influence my choices? And I think that's something we're all going to have to do.
And let's go next to Steve. Thanks. Sarah in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, are you talking to me?
I am, Sarah.
This is Sarah. I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. I was wondering what the guests thought, why we become so complacent and desensitized. Because, like, in the 60s, we had marches and civil rights and protests, and now it seems like we're doing nothing. It just seems like we're more complacent, and it's because we're getting bombarded with all this stuff that people are just tuning it out.
Again, it's a really tricky question, because we think of the revolution as being the country up in arms, and I forget the exact number, but it was really a small percentage of the American population that actually fought the revolution. And I think it was the same in the 60s. So I don't know that people are necessarily more complacent. I think there is a little bit of learned helplessness because of the bombardment, like you said. But I also think there's other things. I mean, Facebook and all of the different petitions and things you can sign online. Now, you could argue about whether those are effective or not, but I think people have also taken to technology as a way to express their protests.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for your call. Do you limit your family on how much TV you watch a night?
Me?
No.
I don't. My daughters are now out of college, but we did not limit TV. We did talk about it a lot and try to put things in perspective. And I think that that was helpful for them because, again, it's hard enough for adults to sort it through, never mind kids. But I also really advocated that they do other things like sports and activities so that they had a life outside of school and outside of TV.
Yeah. Thank you very much for being with us this hour.
I very much appreciate it. My students laugh, but I can talk about this for 15 weeks.
That's great. Thanks so much. Our guest, Professor McNaughton Castle. She's a professor of psychology at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Her special area is stress in media, and she is the author of Mind the Gap. So thanks very much to Chris Molina for producing the hour, and thanks to KP Whaley for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We will be with you again tomorrow, and this hour tomorrow we'll be talking about our fears of early onset Alzheimer's. So we'll look at that issue and the issue of dementia tomorrow during this particular hour. A good hour will precede it, I can assure you. Thank you for listening.